Welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast, where our job is to help you build visibility, professional credibility, and connection with your ideal client by putting the human at the center of innovative marketing, so you can build and strengthen an engaging, enduring relationship with your ideal clients. I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm honored that you're here with me. If you haven't joined our wonderful marketing transformation community yet, go to innovabiz.co and collect your free gift as well. Do subscribe to the show and also leave a review because it helps others find us. Let's get into today's masterclass on this InnovaBuzz podcast.
So often when people are thinking about their messaging, they think about, I need to make sure that you understand what I do. And it's not about what you do. It's about what you do for your clients. So it's a subtle shift, but it's incredibly, incredibly important. If you cannot articulate the thing that you're doing for other people, how it's supporting and helping other people, it doesn't matter how many years in the business you've had. It doesn't matter how many degrees you have. It doesn't matter how many certifications you have. It's just going to be fluff in comparison to being able to say, this is a problem that I have helped solve numerous times for lots of different people, and I've solved it for people like you. Is that something that you'd like to talk more about?
Welcome back. I hope you've had an awesome week so far. Now, if you haven't yet listened to my recent conversations with Janine Garner, the author of Be Brilliant, and with Steve Blank, the creator of the Lean Startup Movement, then do check them out. But stay here first, listen to today's conversation before you do. I'm really excited to have on the InnovaBuzz podcast as my guest today, Michael Roderick, the CEO of Small Pond Enterprises, which helps thoughtful givers become thought leaders by making their brands referable, their messaging memorable, and their ideas unforgettable. Michael began his career in education, teaching high school English, before breaking into the world of Broadway producing. He made this transition in less than 2 years, prompting colleagues to ask, "How did you do that?" This led to Michael creating a series of experiential workshops to study the dynamic behind relationship building and messaging. Now, Michael speaks and consults on how individuals and companies can create referable brands for themselves so they can be top of mind for partnership, media opportunities, and much more. His frameworks have been featured in Forbes, Business Insider, and popular podcasts like The Art of Charm and Unmistakable Creative. Michael also is the host of the podcast Access to Anyone, which shows how you can get to know anyone you want in business and in life using the latest technology and time-tested principles. In our discussion today, Michael talked to me about the three things every business needs to focus on to have their message resonate. And it's sad. Check that out. We talked about how to get your very best copy, which is actually your client's language. And he explained the future trend, the rise of the Maven, content curators that provide insights and experience. Without further ado, then, let's fly into the hive and get the buzz from Michael Roderick. Hi, I'm your host, Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm really excited to welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast today from New York in the USA, Michael Roderick, who's the CEO of Small Pond Enterprises, which helps thought givers become thought leaders by making their brands referable, their message memorable, and their ideas unforgettable. He's also the host of the podcast Access to Anyone, which shows you how you can get to know anyone you want in business and in life using time-tested relationship building principles. Welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast, Michael. It's a real privilege to have you as my guest.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Jason Van Orden, who was our guest on episode 275, suggested that we have you on the podcast and introduced us. And then recently, Jeffrey Medov, who was our guest on episode 320, also suggested that we have you on the show to have a conversation. So I thought,
that's awesome.
definitely time to have you on. So big hello to both Jason and Jeffrey.
Yeah, they're amazing, amazing individuals, and always happy to hear from them.
Now, you've got a very interesting background. You started off as an English teacher, and you then became a Broadway producer, and then you went into networking and relationship building for businesses. So I'm really interested to hear a little bit more about how that transition came about, and then, of course, talking about, in particular, messaging and turning ideas into something that could be a business or a product or a service to others. So what kind of were some of the key moments in that journey?
Sure. So when I was teaching, I was also doing a lot of theater projects, right? So I was always directing something or producing something on sort of the smaller levels. But there was a point where I was starting to raise money for the smaller projects, and I came up with this idea to actually bring a ton of theater companies together and host basically a networking event. It was kind of my first foray kind of into that world. And when I did this, I started to get to know just all of these different people within all the theater industry. And I learned that Broadway in particular is very, very focused on the aspect of credit. So most of the time when a producer is trying to become a producer on Broadway, they'll go to another producer who's at a higher level and they'll say, I will raise this much money for you if I can get credit, meaning can I have my name on the show, right? So my name either above the title or below the title based on how much money gets raised. So when I saw that, I realized that was kind of the main hurdle for a lot of people, was they had to negotiate with another producer on this aspect of getting credit. So what I did instead was I went to producers and I said, I'm actually not interested in credit right now. I just want to get better at raising money. And what happened was all of these producers started giving me deal flow because I wasn't asking for the credit. I was just asking for the opportunity to get out there and sort of test raising money. So when I went to investors, it wasn't just a case of saying like, hey, I have one show and I'd like you to invest. I had a portfolio. So even if somebody said this show wasn't a fit, I could be like, here's four other ones. So I ended up proving myself in terms of raising money very, very quickly in the industry. And then I would have producers come to me and say, hey, would you be willing to raise money for our show? And I'll offer you a credit. So I ended up getting my first Broadway credit in less than 2 years because of that model, because of the fact that I actually started by not asking for credit.
So was that by design that you did it that way?
I was just really, really interested. I had no idea that it would move as quickly as it did. But I have always been the type of person that is interested in looking at a different angle for how things work. So I'm always looking at companies and organizations and looking at the vulnerabilities, the things that we don't necessarily think about. And in most industries, what happens is everybody's trying to sort of cram themselves through the same door. When many, many times there are way more windows in the house, right? So I'm always looking for the windows. Like I'm always looking for what are the things that people are not necessarily paying attention to and how can I test that? And I go often by my own experience. So if I have an experience and I don't like that experience, I ask myself, what would I do differently to recreate that particular type of experience? So even in the relationship building space, I founded a conference that I ran for a number of years. And my problem with conferences for years was this aspect of people looking at your name tag and judging you, right? They would look at your name tag and they'd be like, well, you're not important, you know, and just kind of sort of go their way. So when I did my conference, I made it so that there weren't any titles on the name tags. And if you came in, you saw names, but you saw no titles, and you got a booklet of the names of the people who were there and what they needed, but no job titles. So you didn't know if you were walking up to somebody who was going to be serving drinks later or performing, or somebody who had just come from selling a company. You had no idea. And I've always just been very, very big on this aspect of you want to get to know people as people, because people love to feel useful. They hate to feel used. And when you start to frame things in the context of hierarchy, and you're like, well, I got to know this person and to get this and all that kind of stuff, it doesn't really work, right? And people then feel like they're tools as opposed to a part of your story. And you want people to feel like they're a part of your story because that's what will motivate them to actually help you and support you in your own ventures.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fascinating. So with that also, I imagine it's a safe space for people to actually then share ideas or talk about opportunities, or right, because they're less focused on what you are in terms of where you are in the pecking order of some hierarchy.
Exactly. And it changes the dynamic for people of influence in an environment like that as well, right? Because if you have a name tag and you have influence, you're an investor, you're at a higher level, then a lot of the time when you go to an event, all these people are coming to you and asking you for things because they expect that you have the resources, that you're just going to solve everything for them and sort of fix it. So when you change that dynamic and nobody has that title, the person who's normally just bombarded with people asking and trying to get things from them actually gets to be a human being for once and not feel feel like a slot machine. And whenever Broadway producers or people who are aspiring Broadway producers would come to me, the number one question I would always get would be, how do I find investors? And my answer was always the same. You stop calling them investors. These are people. These are individuals. They have all sorts of different motivations for doing the things that they do. They're not just checkbooks. And the more that you understand that, the more that you understand that these are individuals who have a desire to be a part of something, and you focus your offers and the things that you're putting together around what's interesting to them, the easier the process is going to be, because nobody likes to be pitched on something that they're not interested in.
Hmm. Yeah, that's a really important marketing principle there, I think. You know, that I often say that, you know, when we talk about leads and prospects and so on, I say, well, they're people. And
yes.
Yeah. And also, yeah, if you give them what they're interested in, they're much more likely to pay attention.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. All right. Now, you talked in one of your recent emails, I'll come back to the daily email bit and content and so on in a little moment. But in one of the recent emails, you talked about relationship retention versus relationship expansion, which I think is kind of a related topic to how you've described, building those networks and treating people as people and then actually getting a result much faster than you perhaps would have done through conventional means. So talk to us a little bit more about the concept behind that.
Sure. So we have a focus in the business world on the idea of customer retention, right? So we're always talking about this idea that it's going to take you way more time to find new customers than it is to just keep the customers that you currently have, right? And just like make them happy and take care of them. But the thing that we often forget about is relationship retention. And relationship retention means that if I meet you once, you don't just become a connection on my LinkedIn and a part of my quote unquote Rolodex, right? And never hear from me again, or only hear from me every once in a while, right? It means that I take the time to follow up with you, to check in with you, to get to know you on a deeper level. And what happens most of the time from a relationship building standpoint is that people end up being focused on relationship expansion. So often you'll hear people say like, oh, I need to meet more people, or I need to connect with more people. I need to grow my network. I need to grow my list, all these things, right? But the fact of the matter is, if you grow it and then you just kind of leave these people hanging, then what is it? They're not going to be very helpful in the stuff that you're doing down the line. Like, they're not going to be part of your family, right? So relationship retention focuses on this idea of, okay, I've gotten to know you. We like each other. Where is the second meeting? Where is the third meeting? How do I invite you into groups and communities that I'm a part of so that you feel like you are not just another number in this list of connections? And, you know, the important thing to understand about this is this aspect of, I've talked about this before, where it's like, you have to make a choice of, do you decide to be overextended or overdeliver, right? Mm-hmm. So you can't do both. So with relationship retention, it has its limits. You have to make decisions for yourself about what you can conceivably do. You're not going to be able to have 10, 15 meetings with every single person, you know, in your network, but you can take the time to think about, what are relationships that I would like to deepen? What are ways that I would like to get to know the people within my community better before I spend even more time going out and trying to meet new people, trying to connect with new people, and focusing just on relationship expansion.
Hmm. Yeah, well, thanks for that. The I think the idea behind that is a really important one. And it, again, it comes back to a fundamental principle of marketing as well, in that, you know, recently, I guess with the COVID pandemic, all of a sudden the inboxes, and I'm guessing that I'm not the only person this happens to, but my inbox got absolutely flooded, and there was all this email of offers or how to deal with the pandemic or whatever it might have been,
mm-hmm.
prompted by people suddenly feeling the need to reach out to their bigger network. And a lot of the people I looked at and I thought, I don't even know who this is, or
yeah.
how I got on their list, or, you know, where I'm connected to them. So that there must have been a touch point at some point in time, but no relationship really to speak of. And all of a sudden now they're sometimes they're asking for something, and of course, you know, if you don't have that relationship, you're kind of wondering, well, why would I take that step? And particularly yeah. if they're selling things.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, a lot of the time what tends to happen is we get into this phase, I call it asking blinders, where basically we reach a point where something goes bad, where something kind of goes wrong, and our primitive brain takes over. So what we do is we start asking and we don't actually consider the other person, because we're so focused on trying to get whatever we need to get to, in essence, sort of survive, right? And if you think about it, when everything hit with COVID and the pandemic, and some people, you know, lost their entire industry overnight, right? Some people ended up having clients that, you know, maybe they had year-long contracts that suddenly got cut in half. Like, all these different things happen. Primitive brains everywhere were on fire, right? There were tons of lizards running around, right? Everybody's like, oh, you know.
Everybody's back in survival mode, right?
Exactly. So what are you going to do in survival mode? You're going to have those asking blinders, where basically what you're going to do is you're just going to blast everybody and be like, I need help. Help me. So, you know, et cetera. And the problem with that is that if you haven't taken the time to sort of consider the relationship, think about the relationship, and pay attention to that to the relationship, and sort of who are you close to and who are you not close to, then what's going to happen is just what you said, your response. People are going to be like, who is this guy? You know, yeah. Who is this person reaching out to me? But if you have some sense of who are you closer to, who are sort of tangential contacts, who are people that you've only met once or twice, then you can actually be much more thoughtful in your outreach and your asking. And the metaphor that I often use for this is, if I had a cup of change, one of those big, like big gulp cups of full of change, and I dumped it on the floor, I could have $2, I could have $2,000. Like, there's pennies in there, or there could be quarters in there, or it could be nickels in there, there could be dimes in there. Like, so I'm gonna, like, I'm I have a lot of opportunity if I know where are the quarters, where are the nickels, where are the dimes, where are the pennies. And your network follows that same type of thing. If you have a very strong relationship with somebody and you've taken the time to really build that relationship, then those people are in that quarter category, right? They're going to be open. They're going to be willing to help you. They're going to be willing to support you. But if they don't know you at all, they're in the penny category. Right. Where it's not really going to add a lot, like you're not really going to have a lot of, you know, opportunities. And some people do win penny slots, right? At the, you know, if they go to Vegas, like there are people who win penny slots, but not that many. Right. So it's not about, I think a lot of times, especially in instances like this, people take, you know, they put a very, very high amount of emphasis on chance. And the hope that they're going to hit that one big thing, right? So if I blast out this to 2,000 people, one person's going to give me the $5,000 or $10,000 contract. And those are hard odds to you know, to sort of play against. Whereas if you know that you have relationships and you're able to reach out to people and talk about your situation and you've helped them before, you guys are connected in some way, it's going to be much, much easier to have that conversation and to get the things that you need out of the experience.
That's right. And also knowing those people that you have a closer relationship, knowing them a little bit better, you'd know perhaps a lot more about what they actually need, how you can help them. So it's not just about here's my product or here's my service. What do you think? It's a case of, well, I know Michael needs help in this area. I know I'm really good at helping people in this area. So there's a match there. So I can speak to you at a much deeper level and from a point of view of service as well. So it's not just about, indeed, you know, I need something. I'm selling this thing. It's around, hey, I can help you do this particular thing.
Exactly. I can help you accomplish this goal. Right. And so often that's so often, and this is a great sort of tie into the world of messaging. So often when people are thinking about their messaging, they think about, I need to make sure that you understand what I do. And it's not about what you do. It's about what you do for your clients. So it's a subtle shift, but it's incredibly, incredibly important. If you cannot articulate the thing that you're doing for other people, how it's supporting and helping other people, it doesn't matter how many years in the business you've had. It doesn't matter how many degrees you have. It doesn't matter how many certifications you have. It's just going to be fluff in comparison to being able to say, this is a problem that I have helped solve numerous times for lots of different people, and I've solved it for people like you. Is that something that you'd like to talk more about?
All right. Well, let's talk about messaging then a little bit. So how do you make that subtle shift? So I know, you know, a lot of people put together messaging based on here's the benefits of my service or here's the benefits of my product. The features. Here's the features of my product. Here's what it'll do. So it's, it's thinking, I've got my camera in front of me. So that comes to mind. So I'm thinking, you know, it's got this big a lens on it. It's got this big a sensor on it. It can photograph in really low light. It's got really fast response time or whatever it might be. So they list out the features. And I think technical products are particularly strong in that area. And I often think, well, why don't they just talk to the people?
So basically what I often will tell most early stage entrepreneurs who are coming to me, they're like starting a business or they're starting a project, is that you have to do at least one of the three things I'm about to say, otherwise you'll be sad, SAD. And that is solve a problem, alleviate pain, or decrease friction. So if you want to start to shift the way that you're talking about what it is that you offer, you have to first start with, what problem am I solving for people? What is the issue that they have, and what is the problem that I'm solving? Once you've gotten a handle on that, and you're like, okay, I know that I'm solving this problem. Then you can go deeper and say, what pain does this problem cause? Why is this person in pain? And how am I going to help alleviate that pain? So if you take the time to think about, like, okay, this is the problem, but what really, what causes this person to suffer? Then you're going to get a much, much clearer idea of A, how you're solving the problem and how you're helping to get rid of the pain. And then if you're able to say, you know what, I can do this faster. I can do this in less steps than other people have, or I can do this in less steps than something that's going to take you a really long time, then you've just added another layer to that value for the other person. So when you do that and you really focus on those things, you really focus on this idea of solving a problem, alleviating pain and decreasing friction, then you're able to say, okay, now I know what I'm doing for others. And if you want to get it validated, you can go to prospects or individuals that you've worked with and you can say, this is what I think I do.
Yeah.
Do you agree? This is a problem that I think exists. Do you agree that it's a problem? This is a pain that I think exists. Do you agree that it's a pain point? And is this friction? Is this actually annoying to you? Does this take you a really, really long time? Right. And if you do that, they're sometimes going to give you all sorts of information. And I often will tell people that some of your best taglines and some of your best copy is in your clients' mouths. It's not yours.
Yeah.
Like they'll say to you, oh man, I wish da 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 da. And like, and all of a sudden you've got a tagline or you've got a really fantastic statement about the offer that you have and the thing that you want to put out into the world. And the more that you focus on that kind of language, thinking about things from that angle, you're going to get way more attention because people will have this moment where they're like, oh, you're talking about me. You're talking about me. And one of the things that a phrase that I often use that basically just like my anybody who's a prospect or has been a client, or has turned into a client has like shifted during this phrase is I say that as thought leaders, people sort of in the thought leadership space, one of the most common things is deprioritizing packaging your intellectual property. So taking the time to actually take your ideas and say like, how am I going to package this? Am I going to turn it into a book? Am I going to turn it into a program? How do I take my ideas and turn them into something that other people can talk about? And when I say deprioritizing, packaging your intellectual property, all of a sudden I have this like gut reaction from people where it's like, oh my God, yes, I've put off that book. I've put off creating this, et cetera. So I know if they have that reaction that we should get into a further discussion about what we can do in terms of making this referable brand and helping them build out that thought leadership. And if you are trying to come up with the best messaging for yourself, you want to try to find those phrases that just like they get that person to connect directly with that pain and say, okay, yeah, we need to talk more. I think that that's the thing. It's like that. The metaphor that I often use is when you're thinking about selling or pitching or sort of presenting anything, think about going to a cocktail party. There are two types of servers at a cocktail party. There's the person who jams the cocktail weenie in your face and is like, do you want a cocktail weenie? And you're basically like, no, get that away from me. I'm not interested. You know, sometimes even if you're hungry for a cocktail weenie. And then there's the server who walks by you with a steaming plate of cocktail weenies, lets you like smell it, and then keeps walking. And you're like, no, and you reach out and you go and you grab the cocktail weenie. And that's what you want to do when you're pitching, presenting. You want to leave those breadcrumbs and have somebody say, I need to talk to you more. If you create curiosity in the mind of the other person about what you could possibly do, you are going to have a much easier time with any pitch, with any sale, with any presentation of value. If you can get people to say, oh man, I am so curious about what it is that you could do, how you could solve that problem. I need to know more about you. The second that you're able to do that, the rest of the process becomes significantly easier.
Yeah, well, there's lots of fabulous advice in that little story there and the sad metaphor. I really like that. The one of the things I kind of visualize is there's a customer or a potential customer who's in an existing state in some way, and there's some undesirable things about that. So that's the problem. And then there's a place where they want to be. So they want to achieve something. It's a goal they have, or they want to basically transition from this undesirable situation to their desired situation. And if you can deliver a bridge that takes them there, that's really the product or service you have. So it's focused on their problem, like you say, solving their problem and alleviating the pain and making that transition. So I like the sad acronym.
Thanks.
Yeah, and the other thing I really like also, and using the customer's words, and I've had situations where I've been able to nail this so well that I get the response of, it's like you read my mind.
Mm-hmm.
And when you hear something like that, you say, oh, I got the message right.
Yep. Mm. And it's one of those things where, going back to sort of the pandemic scenario, what I like to say about it is that this is the golden age of customer development, because everybody's home reading their email, everybody is willing to talk to you right now about their problem. So if you're trying to learn more about your products, learn more about your service, you want to do interviews with people to understand pain points, there are plenty of people who are happy to hop on a call with you right now and have those conversations, because they're not as busy as they used to be in terms of they're not traveling. They're not doing nearly as much as they used to, as they used to do. So, this is a really amazing time to be able to have those conversations with clients, prospects, people that you've always been interested in getting to know better. Like, this is a really, really wonderful time for all of that.
Yeah. Yeah. And of course that's one of the principles behind your podcast, isn't it? Access to Anyone.
Yes. Yeah. It's Access to Anyone. The interesting thing about that concept is that most of the time we focus on the idea of access, right? So we're always thinking about how do I get in front of, or how do I get my foot in the door, and all these different types of things. But what I've learned is that interest is far more important than access. I can get in front of anybody if I spend enough money. That is just the way our world works, right? I can buy a ticket to sit next to somebody that I need to, that I need to meet. But if they don't want me sitting next to them, the game is over. So it's my job to create interest. It's my job to have that person say, wow, I need to know more about this person. I need to get to know you. I need to spend more time with you. And when you're thinking about this idea of access to anyone, it's really about figuring out what is of interest to them, what are they excited about, and figuring out how is there a relationship there. And in some cases, it's a service-based thing where it's like, I can help you accomplish this, and there's an actual business relationship. And in some cases, it's literally just a, we're going to help each other out relationship, where literally it's just you have a certain amount of expertise and you're just I'm going to give you some advice, or some people and you're what? I think these people will be really good to talk to. I think you'd have a great time, and you just sort of help them out and support them. I think that one of the biggest mistakes that I see in relationship building is this dynamic of, there's been so much that has been taught about reciprocity. And the way I like to sort of look at it is people sort of worshiping the god of reciprocity, because the idea of reciprocity is if I do this thing for you, psychologically, there are principles that dictate, there are studies that have been done that you are gonna wanna do something for me. But what we forget about is the fact that every single person has their own impulse around reciprocity and their own timeline around reciprocity. So I'll start with impulse. If you are the type of person who has always received, and in your life, you've never really ever worried about anything, then somebody giving you something does not actually mean anything. So your level of reciprocity is not going to be as strong, because you're going to be like, well, you know, I just get things. Like, that's just the way my life works. But if you have had struggles and there have been people who have jumped in and helped you and solved problems for you when you were down and when you were out, then your sense of reciprocity, your impulse of reciprocity is going to be significantly stronger. So for you, if somebody does something or gives you something, you're going to feel like it's like a hot potato and you're like, I got to give it back to you, right? I got to support you. But we don't know what impulse somebody's going to have. And that ties to the idea of the timeline. Different people have had relationships where they've been burned. So they actually create a timeline around reciprocity where they say, I'm going to get to know you before I give anything back or before I help back, because I don't know if I can trust you because somebody else kind of messed with me before on this reciprocity side of things. So the mistake is you get all these people teaching, you know, give and it comes back to you and like do this for this person. And then you'll, expect this thing. And, you know, there's all this like strategy that's, you know, that's presented in the relationship building sort of networking world. And none of that makes any sense. What makes sense is helping other people do the things that they need to do, supporting them and helping them achieve the goals that they need to achieve, and making sure that people know what it is that you need. They will select, they will say, I want to help you or I want to support you. But you should never expect that if you've given to somebody that they're going to give back to you, because then it's not a gift. You have basically engaged somebody in a transaction without them knowing that it's a transaction, right? A gift is I give you something and there's no expectation of return. You go about your life, you do whatever. But if I say I'm giving you something, then I come back to you and I'm like, hey, you know, I did that thing for you and I'm kind of expecting da 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 da, then you were involved in a transaction and you just didn't know it. And I tell people that all the time who are in the giver space. Like if you're really, you love to give and you love to support, there are a lot of people get burned out on it and they're like, oh, you know, I've done so much for this person and they've never done anything back for me. And I'm like, well, they thought you were giving them a gift. You can't be mad. That, like, they didn't know they were in a transaction. Did you communicate that you were in a transaction? No. So you can't expect, you know, you have to just help support, make sure that people know what it is that you need. And the people in your life who want to support you will come forward and support you. And it will be based on their reciprocity impulse and their reciprocity timeline.
Yeah, I've never heard anyone explain it like that. That's really fascinating. And I think it comes back to the core principle, you know, that I kind of feel as though if you're going to give somebody something to say, well, Michael, I'm going to help you out here. I've got something I think might help you in your current situation. Here you go. It's, you know, my philosophy is if I do that, there's no expectation at all on my part. I mean, I'll give that to you because I believe it can help you at the time and you've articulated a problem that I think I can solve for you. So I'll give that to you. Now, if it's like, hey, I've got this service that's this charge, I think that can help you. Well, then I'll have a conversation with you. Then it becomes a different relationship. But if it's something where I say, hey, I've got this thing that I'm happy to give away to you to help you out with that issue, then I don't have any expectation. So, and for me, it's kind of, there's two things about that, because first of all, that is the spirit of giving, because it's a gift, right? If I give you a birthday gift, I don't expect when my next birthday comes around, I say, well, where's Michael? Because I gave him a gift last time he had a birthday. So that's not, to me, that's not how gifts work. And the other thing, of course, then is if I give you a gift without expectation, then I won't be disappointed.
Yeah. Yep. Exactly. There's, you know, it's expectation basically creates so much stress, right? And if you look at it in pitching, if you look at it in sales, etc., expectation is the thing that can just completely kneecap you. So if you go in the, if you go in with an expectation, you know, I'm expecting this is going to be a slam dunk. This call is going to be a layup, you know, with this client or whatever. And then it tanks. You're like completely destroyed, right? Because there's so much stress around it because you had the expectation. But if you go in and you're just like, you know what, this is going to be what it's going to be. And, you know, and I'm going to do what I can do and it's going to go how it's going to go. And you let that be the case. You're not going to worry. You're not going to get, you know, you're not going to get in your own head. And a lot of the times, like if you're trying to sell something, if you're going in with the expectation of, I'm going to close this, I'm going to sell this, you're just going to feel crushed at the end of that experience if it doesn't go the way that you want. But if you don't have that expectation, then you don't really have anything to worry about. And, you know, one of the questions that I get all the time, as you know, I write a daily email. So I'm always asked, like, how do you write daily, right? Like, how do you stay, you know, how do you stay in it? And what I always tell people is that you have to give yourself permission to suck. You're not going to be consistent and brilliant. Not going to happen. Like, it's like every single thing that I produce is not going to be this like mind-blowing, amazing thing. It's going to be market research, right? I'm going to get a sense of sort of like, what do people like to read and what do they not like to read? What causes, you know, what makes things interesting? And I write, so there's the idea of give without expectation of return. I write without expectation of response. I write and I see what comes. I see what kinds of, you know, what kinds of responses come through. And if somebody starts, like if tons of people email me about a particular email and they're like, wow, that was so fascinating or that was so interesting, you know, that tells me that I didn't write enough on that. There's so much more to mine. There's so much more to figure out. But if I write it and it's just kind of crickets, then maybe that principle is not as interesting to, you know, to that particular audience. Maybe there's somewhere else I can go. Maybe there's something else I can try.
Yeah. And I think one of your emails, I don't know, it might've been the one that came in this morning, my time, we talked about, you know, giving yourself permission to suck.
Yes. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. It's such an important thing. It's like, you know, we get into this place so often of sort of worrying about what everybody else is going to think. And if we mess up, there's this thought that, like, you know, it's the end of our career and like all these different types of things. And one look at the news cycle will tell you that nobody cares. Like if we, you know, do a launch and completely tank, if a business falls apart, whatever the scenario is, the number of people who are actually going to pay attention and remember it 5 days from now even is so small in the, you know, in the grand scheme of everything. So you put your stuff out there and you see how it goes, you see what you can do. But if you get too caught up in these expectations about what it's going to be and how it needs to be and all of that kind of stuff, in many cases, you'll never produce anything, right? I call it polishing the car, but never driving it. I have this conversation with clients all the time where it's like, you want to make the concept perfect. You want to have the perfect tagline and all these different types of things, but perfect doesn't exist. Perfect only exists in your mind. So like whenever you're thinking about this thing, like you have this picture in your mind of what it's going to look like, but when it goes out into the world, there's absolutely no way it's going to look like it does in your mind. So just like, you know, like you're going to be disappointed, like understand that that's just the case. Like you're never going to make it exactly what it is in your mind. So when you let go of that and you just say, you know what, give myself permission to suck, give myself permission that, you know, this thing may not be that good, may not be that interesting, that, you know, maybe people will even say to me that sucked or that wasn't good. You free yourself from so much stress and aggravation. I think entrepreneurs, like, we put so much pressure on ourselves because there's so much, what is it, like success porn out there, right? Where it's like literally like, hey, you know, I just made $7 million off of one email and da 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 da. And, you know, all these people feel awful about where they are financially or where they are, you know, in their business and their growth and like all this other stuff. But the fact of the matter is everybody is figuring it out. And whatever somebody thinks is like the way or the fix or whatever, going back to what we were talking about at the beginning, that's the door that everybody's trying to cram themselves through. There's tons of windows.
Yeah.
So there's lots of different definitions of success.
Mm. Yeah, that's great. I did want to actually, we touched on the COVID situation earlier, and I think it'll be October by the time we publish this. Now it's July as we speak. So who knows where we are. Hopefully we'll be coming out the other end of it. But if we look back at how long it's been going, that may be an optimistic hope. So one of the things I wanted to explore with you, because I know you've talked about this in some of your daily emails, is what are some of the opportunities in the kind of new normal, if you like, for where we are currently and as we move forward and hopefully come out of this pandemic situation with some vaccine or something so that we can say that's done, it's finished.
Yeah. So the first one is what I like to refer to as the rise of the Maven. I think that we've hit this point where so much content is coming online, where there is a lot of opportunity for people to be content curators as opposed to just content creators. There's a lot of opportunity for people to say, here's this whole mess of things that everybody's telling you to read and buy and look at, and here's the top five. In my opinion, here's the things that you should be paying attention to. And I think that if we're going to see a lot more people leaning into this idea of curating, leaning into this idea of making sense of the deluge of information that we're going to start getting, because everybody's coming online right now, right? All of the online events, you know, all of the offline events are coming online, like everything's coming online. So right now there is no TripAdvisor for the internet, right? Right. Like we are not, you know, we're not able to sort of figure out. So we look to the mavens. We look to the people who like really know their stuff to help us figure out what we should be buying right now, what we should be paying attention to. So I think that there are a lot of empty thrones out there in regards to curators. Right. There are a lot of industries that have very little curation where nobody's sort of coming forward to say, I'm actually going to vet these things and decide what's top quality and what's top tier. And I think that there's a lot of opportunity specifically within that. And one of the biggest empty thrones right now is the aspect of technology and all of the virtual tools that we have. So far, most people are just figuring out the tool, but the opportunity is going to be in the experience. The opportunity is going to be in figuring out ways to use that tool like nobody else is using it. And when you do that, you're going to really stand out because you're going to be one of the first people on that tool exploring a new way of using it. So the person who creates an experiential dance party using Zoom and VR, you know, is going to suddenly have a leg up on whoever's just doing the virtual dance party using Zoom, right? The person who figures out how to make breakout rooms even more dynamic or presentations even more dynamic and change the experience that people are going to have is going to get a lot more traction than all of the people who are just using the tool as the tool is, you know, meant to be used, right? And this is the thing. It's like there's so many tools out there and there's so many technologies and most people focus on the utility of the technology, but the power and the opportunity is going to be in the experience of the technology. Coming up with your own way of creating an experience using that tool. Using that tool in some cases for something that nobody ever even thought of to use. That's where the opportunity is going to be. And I think more and more people are going to be doing that because we're going to get bored being online. If this continues, we're going to get bored. And we're going to say, you know what? I don't really want to go to another happy hour right now. Like, I don't want to be, you know, on another, like, I don't want to be in a breakout room. And people are going to ask, like, what's next? And we're going to be looking for people to say what's next. We're going to be looking for people to come up with whatever that is.
Mm. Yeah, that sounds like a great opportunity. And I think, you know, there are a few examples around of people doing that to a limited extent. And I think, you know, it might be like there's all these unboxing videos that I think of devices.
And, yeah.
And I think that's kind of at a very low level, that sort of thing, because like, again, using the camera example, you can tell I'm a photographer. So
yeah.
If I'm interested in a new camera, I'll go onto YouTube and then I'll see people who've done unboxing of the cameras I'm interested in. They've put them through their paces. They give some give their opinion on these are the strong features and these are the shortfalls of this particular model, and this is what I like about it, this is what I don't like about it. And so I've got a bit of a feel for them, and that saves me a lot of time. So I know one of the things you talk about is the idea of time investment. So somebody else has invested time in getting to know that device, and I can watch a short video and all of a sudden I know as much as they do about that device, short of actually having held it in my hand. And so I'm at a different level, ready to make whatever decision I want to make in terms of purchase.
Yep, exactly. And I think that, you know, even with the, like with tools, right? So if we think about photography, right? I know lots of people who are actually, you know, starting to figure out like, how are we going to do virtual photography, right? Mm-hmm. And like, are we taking pictures of being on Zoom and like all these different types of things and presenting them as sort of part of our, you know, thought leadership and our, you know, our material? I can totally see instances in which there will be Zoom rooms for photographers that are basically filled. They're in a room with models and they're going to do virtual shoots. Yeah. Like they're like, I can see a world in which these things are going to happen if we keep ending up in the scenario where we have to stay home, because we will eventually figure out what to do next. Like even in the theater world right now, you can't be in a Broadway theater, but people are already starting to do plays over Zoom. Mm-hmm. But we're going to hopefully start to see some innovative directors who are going to utilize all of those technology tools and all of those things to basically create a play experience that we watch on Zoom or that we like interact with on, you know, on Zoom. Like there's so many things that are potentially possible within all of this if we look at the experience that's being created by the tool as opposed to just the utility.
Yeah, that's right. That's a really great example. And I think what comes out of that too is people, as they see, hey, this is actually possible to create a not the same experience, it's not the same, but a related experience to this, which is going to attract or be of interest to a similar audience. If I can create that, all of a sudden that opens up a whole lot of opportunities. So let's think out a year perhaps where COVID is history and we're back to some semblance of normal social interactions in person. We can go out to a theater or a play or to a concert in live experience, but then having those virtual ones is another way to present it to a different audience, a bigger audience. So you're not limited by geography, for example. You're not limited by, well, if it's like a Broadway play, that might be quite expensive to go to, particularly if it's a new play, new launch, popular one. All of a sudden now it's available to people that don't have the financial means to go to the big Broadway theaters.
Exactly. And that aspect of, you know, leveling the playing field is something that is sorely needed. We're, you know, we're in a lot of the challenges that we're in because you have people who basically have made the decision to sort of accumulate as much wealth as possible at the expense of other individuals, right? So if we can start using technology and reimagining the idea of what it means to have an exclusive experience, right? And not have that exclusive experience just only be tied to price, then there's a lot of opportunity to just make it so that more people have access, more people have opportunities that they normally wouldn't have. And I think about how Disney Plus did Hamilton. And if you imagine, you could have paid through the nose and you wouldn't have gotten any of the close-ups or the angles that you got from the fact that that show was shot, right? And you could actually see all those points on the stage. Like, you could get the best seats in the house to any production of Hamilton, but you would never have gotten all of those moments that they were able to capture in that particular way. So there's so many interesting opportunities there for expansion and for thinking about, like, well, what are we doing to make sure that there is more access and that it's not just about, you know, only the top tier people get to go to these, you know, get to go to these events and these things, especially if we get to a point where we are able to go out again.
Hmm. All right. Well, this is fascinating, Michael. I could go on talking ages about all these ideas, and there's a whole lot that I've got on my list here that we haven't actually touched on, but maybe we need to do a second episode. I think it's a good time to move on to the buzz round, which is our innovation round, and it's designed to help our audience, who are primarily leaders and innovators in their field, with some tips from your experience. So I've got five questions, and hopefully you'll give us some really inspiring answers today that'll motivate the listener to go and do something awesome as a result.
Awesome.
So what's the number one thing you think anyone needs to do to be more innovative?
You want to go where you're awesome, not where you're ordinary. What I mean by that is, a lot of the time what we tend to do is we tend to sort of go within our own circle and within our own industry, and we only associate with people sort of within that circle. So if we're teaching something or presenting something, then it's always kind of rated against whoever the leaders are in that industry. But if you go to an industry that doesn't know your world at all, then you're awesome. You're fascinating to those people. And the example I would use is, like, in a room of Broadway producers, we'd all be sort of basically rating each other on, like, which shows we got involved in, right? And it would be a very, you know, like one-up-ish kind of conversation. Whereas if I go to a gathering of finance professionals and hedge fund owners and folks in that world, I'm likely probably going to be the only Broadway producer there, right? And if I say I produce Broadway shows, to them, that's going to be fascinating. And they're going to want to talk about all the elements of that. So if you're trying to be more innovative, you want to go to these places where people don't know about your stuff, because you're going to be able to talk to them and hear other perspectives. And you're going to start to learn how to explain your world and your industry even better, because you won't be stuck in what I call the echo chamber of the enlightened, where everybody's kind of using the same language and saying the same things.
Hmm. Yeah. And it probably helps you connect the dots more too, right, between your world and this other world that you're in. And there's probably heaps of opportunities coming out of that.
Exactly.
Which might preempt the next question, which is, what's the best thing you've done to develop new ideas?
So I would say probably the best thing I've done to develop new ideas is get a diverse group of people together. So like creating kind of like an innovation board where we all get together and we talk about, like, well, what are we working on? And people share what's going on in their industry and sort of what they're up to and how they've solved the problem in that industry. And then you're able to kind of take it and sometimes bring it to another industry. I often refer to it as being Prometheus, right? When you bring something to another industry that they've never heard of, it's like you're bringing fire to that industry. So I've had numerous instances where I'll get a gathering together that is a very, very eclectic mix of people, and somebody will bring up something because of their background that has nothing to do with my background, but it's become something that's been really useful. And probably the best example, when I was in the theater world, I was getting together with a bunch of different people from lots of different industries, and one of them was telling us about his trip to, I think it was China. And what he had done was, he had gone into this store and he wanted to buy a TV. and the TV was $200. And his friend said, listen, we're going to get that TV for a lot less than $200, but we have to come back later. So he's like, okay, cool. So he went away with his friend, and his friend got four or five other people who also wanted to buy a TV. And they all went into the store and said, we're all willing to pay, but we're not willing to pay $200. So I think they got the TV for like $50 or something like that. So yeah. I thought that was fascinating. And at the time I was producing on the smaller level, I was doing like these smaller shows in these 99 seat theaters. So there was a theater that normally charged like $3,000 a month or something to basically be able to rent the theater. So I found two other theater companies, and I went to that theater and I said, listen, we can book out 3 months of your year, the 3 months that you do not have to look, because each of us has a show. There's three of us, but we're each not paying $3,000.
Yeah.
And they gave us a better deal on the space. And I would have never known about that had I not been talking to that person in the manufacturing world, in the technical world, who told me this story from their experience in China.
Mm. Yeah, I love that example. It's wonderful. All right. Now, do you have a favorite resource you use most often?
Favorite resource? I mean, I always use Evernote. It's one of the top things for me to basically just jot down ideas whenever I get them. So anytime something pops up that I think is interesting, I'll put it into Evernote. And then when I'm going to write later on, I'm able to kind of look through and be like, oh yeah, that's really, really great. And then I have to mention Superhuman, which is this, it basically makes it so that you can be at inbox zero, no matter how many emails you get. It's a very, very intuitive system that kind of takes over your email and makes it all keystrokes. And it's a very, very useful tool. And it's the way I'm able to stay on top of my email and stay on like inbox zero, like all the time.
Mm. Mm. I'll have to explore Superhuman.
it's awesome. It is awesome.
That's a pain that most of us have.
Yeah.
Inbox that keeps overflowing. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Now, what's the best way to keep a client on track?
Best way to keep a client on track is to set some way for you to stay in touch, right? So in some cases, it's a shared Google Doc where you can just go in and basically see, like, are they writing? Are they doing the, you know, are they doing the work? In other cases, it may be doing a check-in call during the process, right? So like maybe you have a session and you have another session the following week, but you schedule a 15-minute check-in call, or even something as simple as like, I will text you at 4 p.m. every Thursday, like whatever it is, it needs to be something where you touch base on progress as opposed to touching base on like the actual work. I think that a lot of the time people get off track because they do the work and then there's never any sort of discussion about how the work's going and what's happening. You just sort of come back and sometimes you end up wasting, you can waste an entire coaching session in some cases just getting caught up. So better to give them a tool to get you caught up before you get on that next call and sort of know what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a really good approach. Sort of focus on progress as opposed to the work focus. Obviously, you've still got to talk about the work, but the focus is about, okay, here's where we've come to this week, and these are the things that still need to happen.
Yep. Yeah, it also provides for the client like a forward motion feel, like they know that they're moving forward. They know that they're heading in a particular direction. And I think a lot of the challenges, specifically with coaching, is that a lot of coaches start with what I like to refer to as the "what do you want to have for dinner" conversation. Hmm. So, like you say to your partner, "What do you want to have for dinner?" I don't know, maybe pizza, maybe China. And you go back and forth, back and forth, back and forth until somebody finally makes a decision. And it's much, much better to say, you know, we're going to have pizza. Do you like pizza? You know, and go through that, you know, and sort of go through that process. So giving them sort of, we're going to go through these steps. you know, what questions do you have about these steps, as opposed to what's on your mind today? And what should we, you know, and what should we talk about? Because that can just, you know, send you down like 80 different rabbit holes.
Hmm. All right. And what's the number one thing anyone can do to differentiate themselves?
I'm going to go with create your own language. So a lot of the time, I talk about Shakespeare, and there's a reason why we all know Shakespeare, and very, very few people know Christopher Marlowe, even though they were writing at the same time, and even though they were writing very, very similar kinds of stories and plays. And the reason is that Shakespeare added new words to the English language. So people were going around using Shakespeare's words, Shakespeare's language all the time, which always referred back to him. And if we look at authors like J.K. Rowling, she added new words and people use new words. Filmmakers like George Lucas, right? We all know what the Force is, right? So it's that aspect. It's like, if you want to really make sure that people are paying attention and differentiating, and you're differentiating yourself, you want to have your own words for things, because then people will constantly refer back to you and say, oh, that's the way you say it, or that's how, you know, you do it. In my daily emails, I often refer to Facebook as the book of faces.
Yeah.
And I can't tell you the number of times that just slight shift in the language has caused more and more people to refer to the daily email or refer to me or sort of talk to me. So really finding your own language is, it's not an easy task to come up with your own phrases and your own way of doing things, but it is so, so valuable, and so few people actually do it, that it's something that can.
Yeah.
Awesome. Thanks.
All right. And good example on the book of faces. I noticed that in one of your very early emails, and then I said, okay, that's the language you use. And then there's the LinkedIn.
Yes. Yeah.
Yep. Belly up the LinkedIn. Yeah. All right. Well, thanks, Michael. This has been really fabulous. Now, where can people find out more about you, maybe even sign up for that daily email that really is full of gems every day, and perhaps get in touch with you to say thanks for what you've shared today?
Oh, thanks so much. Yeah. So I'm at smallpondenterprises.com. So they can go to the website, and there's a bunch of content on there. There's a bunch of different stuff to download. I also gave you a link to a tool that I call the Referability Rater. And basically, if they go there, they can be able to sort of test their referability. So it's a bunch of quiz questions that'll help you think about like how referable your brand is. And when they get the Referability Rater, you can decide if you want to join the daily email, or if you want to, you know, contact and have more conversation and all that kind of fun stuff.
Okay. Thanks for that, Michael. And we'll have links to the website and also to sign up for the Referability Rater on the show notes. So do you have any parting advice you'd like to leave our listener today?
So my favorite is that the keys to all the doors you need open are in other people's pockets. it's one of those things where a lot of the time we struggle and we try to sort of figure things out on our own. And so, so often, whatever you're banging your head against, whichever wall you're banging your head against, somebody else has like just decimated it and turned it to rubble. So it's always worth it to reach out to the people in your world, have conversations about what it is that you need, because you just never know how they could help you. And most importantly, you're sitting there with lots of keys in your pockets right now for things that other people need. Have those conversations and see where it can all go.
Yeah, I love that. Great metaphor. All right. Now, finally, who would you like me to chat with on a future Innova Buzz podcast, and why?
So I was thinking about this when you were talking about the photographer side of things. I have a friend, John D'Amato, who is a photographer and specifically focuses in the world of thought leadership. And he has recently started to explore, like, how do you do this virtually? So he's done like Zoom photos and all these different types of things. And he's a very innovative guy. He's got lots of really cool ideas. He does a lot of great writing. So I just think because you're a photographer, and B, because he's looking at this through a different new lens, I think he'd be a great person to chat with.
Mm, great. Well, that's fascinating because John actually reached out to me on LinkedIn this week.
Oh, my God.
And connected with me and said, hey, do you think I could contribute to your podcast? Or do you think that would add value? And I checked out his profile and I said, and it was fascinating. I was fascinated. I said, oh, I definitely will add value. I mean, I'm really curious to learn more. So we're having that conversation as we speak.
Oh, my God. That's amazing. Yeah. That is fantastic.
Yeah. So thanks for the recommendation. So we definitely will have John on.
Fantastic. I'm excited to listen to that episode.
Okay. Well, thanks so much for sharing your time and your insights with us so generously today, Michael. This has been absolutely fabulous. I've learned heaps more. I love all the metaphors you use. And, you know, there were so many things that we didn't get to that I had on my list. So I think we might have to circle back and have another episode in the future.
Yeah, that would be great. I would love it. This was an absolute blast.
All the best, and yeah, let's keep in touch.
Awesome. Thanks again.
Bye. I hope you enjoyed that insightful and informative conversation with Michael and took something away from his episode. The SAD acronym, solve a problem, alleviate a pain, and decrease friction, was one of the many highlights for me, as was the idea of creating your own language. I'd love to know what you took away from Michael's episode. Leave a comment below the blog post, which you can find at innovabiz.co/Michael Roderick. That is michaelroderick. All lowercase, all one word, innovabiz.co/Michael Roderick. You'll also find contact information for getting in touch with Michael there, as well as links to the Small Pond Enterprises website, his referability rater, the Access to Anyone podcast, and the other resources we spoke about in today's conversation. Michael suggested we have a conversation with John D'Amato, virtual photographer and visual storyteller, on a future InnovaBuzz podcast episode. So, John, keep an eye on your inbox for an invitation from us to the InnovaBuzz podcast, courtesy of Michael Roderick. Tune in again to the next episodes of the InnovaBuzz podcast, where we've got some more fantastic guests lined up, including Ross Simmons of Foundation Marketing and Bruno Signaco, author of the book The Art of Compassionate Business. Thanks for listening to this episode. Make sure you subscribe to the show to be reminded of new episodes. It's free to subscribe. Leave a review if you like. Even if you don't like me, I'm okay with that. I'm asking you to leave a review because it helps other people find this show. Go to innovabiz.co to join our marketing transformation community and access a free gift my team and I made for you. It's the Marketing Master Mini Class. We want to give you everything you need to transform your marketing into a human-centered, relationship-focused growth engine. Until next time, I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz. Remember, be awesome and keep innovating.